5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio, I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
Greetings once again as we have arrived at episode 6 of season 3 of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett. Great to have you aboard as we talk to you about the world of sports media. On today's episode, Anthony Stalter of 101 ESPN in St. Louis is my guest. Anthony works middays with former Cardinal Chris Duncan. They've been together for 5 years, had a heck of a run together. I think you guys are going to enjoy learning a little bit more about his background. On an unrelated note, the Barrett Sports Media Programming Summit is coming to Los Angeles in February 2019. We're going to be at the Grammy Museum, which is right near the Staples Center. LeBron James was kind enough to play a game on Thursday night, the first evening of the conference. So if you work in the industry and are looking to attend, tickets are on sale. We've got some discounts on hotel rooms. Any information you want, whether it's for sponsorship purposes, speaking, any of that, reach out to me via email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. As I mentioned on the last episode with Colin Dunlop, the strategy going forward is to release 4 episodes at a time each month. It just makes things easier, plus it gives you guys an opportunity to binge listen without having to wait week after week. I'm not going to do a ton of talking. You guys can get the information and opinion on the website and on social media. I'm also going to be doing some video interactions, so if you have questions you want my opinion on, use the hashtag BSMMailbag, and I'll respond to some of those on a weekly basis on social media through video. But in the meantime, let's get rolling. Anthony Stalter is here, and I want to bring you that conversation right now.
3, 2, 1.
Before we get into your career, let's start with the beginning. When did you start listening to sports radio, and who were you listening to?
All right, so when I was in high school, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago.
Okay.
And so I listened to whatever my dad had on the radio at the time, which was The Score in Chicago. And who they have? Dan Hampton,
yep.
Mongo. They had him on a lot. I wouldn't necessarily say that I heard that and I said I wanted to be in sports radio. What wound up happening was I actually wanted to be Secret Service, FBI, like one of the, that seemed cool to me in high school. I sat down with, I think, the Marines, like you go through that. I wasn't the greatest student, so I was looking at other avenues besides college. But my buddy wound up doing this, like, all, you know, public access, Wayne's World style show, and it was all sports. He called it Sports Preview. And he said, hey, I want to have you on it. So I went on, and I always loved sports. Didn't consider it a career, but I got into it that way, and it was like, you can actually make money just talking about sports. So from there, I ditched the idea of getting shot at, which was probably smart for me, and then went up to Central Michigan University, broadcasting and journalism major minor. Wound up doing some Central Michigan baseball and softball games from play-by-play, hooked up with a couple of nightly shows, and I just absolutely fell in love with it, and then wound up in Detroit for a while.
So what station did you work at while you were in Michigan?
I was at WDFN in Michigan and Detroit,
right?
And that was one of the big stations. The other one was an FM station,
yep,
which is,
the
I think,
Ticket.
The Ticket,
yep,
which is the number one station, I believe,
oh,
the
yeah,
sports station,
it
like
dominates.
All America. And that was just coming about when I was at DFN. And you can kind of hear it climbing a little bit. They got a guy named Mike Valeni, who I was in a fantasy football league with. And Mike Valeni was one of like the most talented dudes I've seen. I mean, he just had it. And he was a New Yorker like yourself, Jason. And he went to Michigan State and he put together, have you ever heard his Michigan State rant?
Oh, yeah.
After they lost to Notre Dame.
They choked on applesauce.
It was like talking about that. I think he called one of the coordinators the Muppets or something. It was epic. But Valeni wound up being the rising star at the time that I was at DFN. And I owe a lot of my career to that station. They had a program director, Rona Danzinger, who was awesome, and she gave me a shot to do some updates. And she even told me, look, I'm not comfortable with you doing updates. Because I was doing like ESPN, Sunday Night Baseball. Nobody's in the building but me. I did some producing. There you produced. It's not like here in St. Louis. You produced and ran the board. So I got all my kind of a learning experience from that. And one day she called, I'll never forget, she goes, I don't want you to do this, but I'm stuck. All the other guys are out. You're going to do it. And I wound up doing some updates for them and eventually got my way down to St. Louis.
You know, it's interesting. We might have crossed paths had something went through, because before 101 ESPN launched where you are now, I was in an in-between stage. I had left KFNS. I had a couple months on the sidelines, thought I was going to go to Houston. Things fell apart at the last minute. And I get the call, we want you to fly out to the ticket. We're looking for a PD. And I'm like, this is why I went through that crap with KFNS.
Sure.
Because I'm going to land the biggest damn station in America. This station is a juggernaut. Valenti, I'm a huge fan of Valenti. I think that guy's ass-kicking talent. So I get out there, and I could tell, like, Tom Bigby had done a tremendous job with that radio station. And they were talking about a succession plan for Tom. But Tom wasn't ready to leave yet, nor should they have let him leave. The station was rocking. So while I got brought out there, you could just tell, like, all right, this probably isn't going to be the fit. Tom probably needs two more years before he's ready to move on. And guys, why would you want anyone else running the radio station right now besides Tom? So it was kind of one of those, like, well, if you came here, we'll eventually ease you in, but I'm not really looking to just sit on the sidelines.
Sure.
As it turned out, didn't happen, and then a month later, the 101 possibility comes out.
Well, that's good.
So it all, in the end, worked out pretty well, which now you're at 101. So what led you from Michigan to St. Louis?
So that's kind of an interesting path, and it has a lot to do with my wife, Kristen, who's from St. Louis. When I was in Detroit, you got the sense that the station was about to do some bad things, and they did. They fired Jamie Samuelson and Greg Brady, who was their morning show. Huge fan of both guys, Jamie especially. He was a mentor of mine. Sean Bellegian was still with the station for a while, but eventually they got rid of Stoney and Wojo, who was their afternoon guys.
Yep.
And good for the ticket, because they hired a lot of that talent.
Oh, yeah, Jamie's in mornings now.
Jamie's awesome. He's such a good good guy, on top of being just a pro, and he taught me a lot about being a pro. So I wind up not doing anything outside of producing in Detroit. I went back home because I saw the opportunities were going to be limited there. There's too many talented people there. Wanted to go another route. And my background is actually in writing. So I got picked up by the Washington Post, and I wasn't in Washington. I was actually in Chicago doing a lot of NFL-style writing. They had an NFL-type blog where I was doing a lot of that. I was picking up a lot of radio hits around the nation. Mm-hmm. I wound up doing a hit in Baltimore because I think one year I predicted the Ravens to win the Super Bowl, and guys had me on, and my name kind of got out there a little bit. But my wife, my eventual wife, she moved from Boston, where she was working for AB out there, back to St. Louis, right? So I was in Chicago. We're doing the long-distance relationship. It was shit or get off the pot time.
Right.
And she goes, hey, you coming down here, or am I going to have to go up there? And I was the one with the mobile job because I could write from anywhere. I wind up in St. Louis. I lost some of my writing gigs, which that happens. You're a self-contractor. That happens, right? And I go to Kristen, and she says to me, she goes, all right, dude, what are you doing now? And I'm like, okay, I guess I got to get another job.
That Secret Service life would have been a great choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Right now.
That would have been that would have been the smarter job. Of course, I took the risk. I'm a big risk taker, and now I'm screwed, right? But 101 Sports, which is our station here at 101 ESPN, they had a job opening for a producer. And I didn't know what job it was. I had no idea what show it was. So I applied for it. And now Kristen and I joke about it, because I remember filling out the application. I go out. I say to Kristen, I go, I'm qualified for this job. I produced up in Detroit. Everything that they're looking for, I've already had. It's just a matter of somebody finding my resume in a stack of papers, right? So Kristen, now she tells me, she goes, you're adorable. I mean, at that time, when you walked out of the office saying that you're applying for a radio gig in St. Louis, I thought there's no way in hell that you were going to get it. Luckily, Hoss Newport, who you know very well,
yep.
He was the he wasn't the program director. He's assistant program director at the time. He found me in a stack of papers, and my qualifications met, matched what they were looking for. Wound up being for the Fast Lane, which is the number one show here in St. Louis. Wound up producing for them for a year and a half. I did some weekend show for the station. Bernie Miklas happened to go from middays to going back to the paper full time. Hoss took a major, major chance. I mean, you know the market, yep. Jason. Some no-name outsider. And he paired me with Chris Duncan, which is such a huge move. And we wound up doing the show, and now we've got the show going for 5.5 years now.
So when you were producing at first, you were producing the Fast Lane. Was that when it was Carriker, Duncan, and DeMarco?
It was.
So now Dunk becomes your radio partner for right. the last 5 years. How was Anthony Stalter the producer? If I went around the building polling people, tell me about Stalter as a producer. What yeah. would they tell me is good or bad?
Couldn't book guests. Had no guest booking ability. Probably went too NFL heavy, right?
Right.
And didn't talk enough blues. So that was probably it. I think Randy said it one time. He said you always knew how to play the hits, which I believe is one of your phrases, mm-hmm. which is absolutely correct. Because I did. Hey, listen, the Cardinals are the biggest thing in town here. We did a lot of Cardinals. I was more content heavy than trying to find a guest. So I think that was one thing that people picked up on. I knew what I was talking about, and I knew what the big story was, and I credit a lot of that to my writing background.
Mm-hmm. So take me through now having been a producer and becoming a host. There are two things I want to touch on. One, I want to talk about your appreciation for the producer, because when you've been in that role and now you transition to being behind the mic, you know what that guy's going through or right. gal's going through. How has that affected your perception of what producers do and what you're looking for them on your show?
The biggest thing is formatics of a show. I realized what it required to get ratings, sticking to a clock, understanding how everybody listens to a show. Here in St. Louis, the big joke is 20 minutes.
Right.
You're in your car for 20 minutes, right? It's okay to go back to a topic that you did before, because chances are you're speaking to a whole nother audience. If I just did radio host, I would say, I'm bored with these topics, do something new.
Right.
That doesn't mean that your audience is bored of that topic.
Right.
Chances are it's a whole new audience, like I was saying. So that was probably the biggest thing to me. And actually, I don't know if the formatics, but understanding what an actual topic is and what a note is. Because when I produce and I pitched ideas, and maybe I got pushback from one of my other hosts, I would be like, well, what the hell? This is a good topic. What I didn't consider was, can my host talk about it for 10 minutes?
Right.
Because my host can't talk about it for 10 minutes. It doesn't matter if I think it's a good topic. The host isn't going to be into it.
Right.
So a lot of times I may give pushback to Dan Betlock, our producer, who does a nice job for us. But I'll say, Dan, look, can you talk about this for 10 minutes? Because if you can't do it, you can't expect me to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of that topic building, formatics of the show, I got that from a producer standpoint. And I never bag a guy for not being able to land a big guest. I certainly want to talk to the biggest guest possible, but if you can't do it and you're trying, I know what it's like to constantly be told
right.
no.
Well, when you were talking about the 20-minute mentality in this town, and it's because the commute, unless you're like down towards the city, it's just on the outskirts where a lot of the audience is. That's what they deal with.
Sure.
They go from Fenton, Missouri to Creve Coeur. It's not that far of a drive.
Right.
I used to tell Randy all the time, and he'll probably tell you this, like, sitcoms, not movies. I'm like, this isn't a feature film. People aren't here for 2 hours. They're here literally 22 minutes of content, 8 minutes of commercials.
Right.
That's your best shot. The other part that I want to touch on, because we talked about your perception of producers from having done it, the transition going from producer to host, not just making that jump, but doing it with the guy who you produced,
yeah.
who also played the game at a professional level.
Right.
So you're going with a guy who's obviously early on, hey, I need this guy. His credibility is going to have people pay attention to me. But on the other hand, I got to get his respect now as a host, not as his guy who was helping him build topics. So how did you work on that with Dunk? Because you guys, although, and we'll get into some of the things with Dunk having some challenges
yeah.
in his life, but you guys ultimately have been together 5 years. Mm-hmm. So how'd you ultimately win him over as his partner versus his producer who now talks?
That's a really good question. So it certainly had its challenges, because I do think there were times where Dunk viewed me as a producer. And that was something that he couldn't get past when it came to maybe challenging a Cardinals topic. If it was an NFL topic, he trusted me. He knew my background. Again, writing for the Washington Post and all that stuff, where it's like, hey, this guy's got his... If this dude says this is a good NFL topic or a Rams topic when the Rams are still here, I trust that aspect of it. But when it comes to Cardinals, comes to baseball, that's his territory.
Right.
That's his baby. I learned very quickly that if he wanted to talk something Cardinals, I need to show the same respect to him that he does for an NFL topic. If this dude says, who grew up in a clubhouse his entire life under the great Dave Duncan, you know, and going, him and Shelley going all these games, and again, growing up in a clubhouse, I'm going to show him that respect. I'm going to trust him on that. And I better do my effing homework.
Right.
I mean, that's the biggest thing, Jason. I studied the Cardinals nonstop. I got into kind of the analytics. I tried to bring something different to the table that maybe he wasn't looking at, a fan's perspective. Mm-hmm. There were times where we got on to get into on-air fights that wound up being great radio because I took the fan side of it as mm-hmm. opposed to, you know, him from a player standpoint. I think ultimately that's how I gained his respect. But I'm not going to lie to you, there were several times where, you know, he looked at me as like, dude, weren't you just producing an hour ago? You know, you're going to challenge, you're going to come at me on this. But the bottom line is, the thing that Dunk and I talked about is, how do we do great radio? How do we entertain?
Right.
And I can't sit there and kiss his ass for 2 hours. You know, I need to come up with something that's going to make him think, so that the listener says, oh, you know what, hey, if Dunk is thinking about this twice, maybe Anthony's got something here.
So how has that relationship changed from the time that he had that perception early on and you were trying to gain that respect to now having done it 5 years together?
I think that it worked over time. It worked, there was times where we were finishing number two in the book. Mm-hmm. And you kind of, it's like the Cardinals are now, they're red hot. You're not going to fight the method. You're not going to talk about Mike Schilt doesn't have a big name. You're going to talk about the fact that this dude's winning. So once we were able to prove it to ourselves that we could win and win in the ratings books, I think everything else fell into place. Now, you still had challenges, of course. Me being a football guy, him being a baseball guy, we butted heads sometimes of what should be a lead story. Ultimately, he won because it's the Cardinals, and he's Chris Duncan. But, you know, I think just proving that we could win, I mean, it was that changed the ballgame. And not only that, Jason, you know radio. Who wins 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock?
Yeah.
You don't have any built-in audience. You lost the noon o'clock hour where
the guy just came back from lunch and is going right into a meeting.
Exactly.
You've got one quarter hour.
Right. You cannot waste anybody's time going 1 to 3. You better bring it either opinion-wise or entertainment-wise. You play it safe 1 to 3, somebody's going to listen to The Point or Casey or The Arch on their way to that meeting. They ain't giving you the time.
Right. Now, you've worked with him for 5 years. Over the last 5 years, he's had some health challenges. Yeah. In his life. That's obviously taken him away from the microphone, and he's right now in that situation. How has that affected you from a personal and a professional part? Because, I mean, you guys have been tight. I mean, you've worked together for a long time. But on the other hand, you also have a show to do. How have you dealt with that from a personal and a professional standpoint?
It's been tough. It's been a really hard year. When he first was diagnosed with a brain tumor, he called me, and I'll never forget, my wife and I were at a condo. And I sat down, and he told me the news, and I kind of held it together, and I just said, hey, you're going to fight this thing. You're the toughest dude I ever met. And that's 100% true. We got off the phone, and I started crying. I remembered back to when the Fastlane work was considering me for being a producer, and I sat down there, and Randy was engaged, and Dunk was, like, engaged, and they were asking me questions. And DeMarco, I think, was trying to play me a little bit, trying to upstage me a little bit, which is, DeMarco and I are really tight now. I love DeMarco. But I just thought back to that first meeting, and Dunk was so, he didn't know me from Adam, but he was engaged, and, you know, he got my phone number right away, and we became friends almost from day one, because I was trying to help him. I was trying to make him an actual broadcaster, which is something he wasn't really doing before. He was really mm-hmm. new to it. To fast forward to, he's telling me he's got a brain tumor. And, you know, I cried that night. And I'm like, man, this is going to be something that's going to be incredibly tough for him. I was still producing at the time. But when he overcame the tumor and we got the show together and we started having success, we were on cloud nine. And then the tumor came back. And the tumor came back less than a year ago. And it was just utterly deflating. And I got a chance to see what he had to deal with day to day. We're talking about lost speech sometimes, seizures where he can't talk because one side of his body kind of goes down. And I don't mean to air out his personal stuff. This is stuff he would probably tell you the same. I'm talking about a guy that had to not only study his craft and try to do a good radio show, but not wonder day to day whether or not he could physically do it.
Right.
And finally, we had a conversation, and he said, he goes, you know, I don't want to fail you guys. I don't want to fail the show. I don't want to let you guys down. And I just said, you're not going to let anybody down. I hope you concentrate on your health. And the next day, he took the leave of absence.
Mm-hmm.
But since that point, it's been tough because we've talked about, you know, I always say filling in for Chris Duncan. And I always want to say that. I always want to have his name on the show, his presence here, because the turn is me, Chris Duncan, Dan Batlock. We didn't take over for anybody. That was our show. So I always want to have his name on the show in some way. And there's so much that I've learned from him in life and certainly in baseball. That guy's going to be with me forever. And I hope that, you know, the second time around, he fights it as hard as he did the first time. But again, I've seen so many challenges for him. I wouldn't wish what he's going through on anybody.
Well, now that puts you in a spot where you mentioned how it's been a tough year. You're working with rotating co-hosts. And there's a pro and a con to that. Sometimes, okay, it's nice to see a new face that you haven't seen, an opportunity to test some people who you thought, hey, I'd like to do a show with them. But on the other hand, you also find out who doesn't prepare,
right,
who shows up just as the, you know, the opening theme is playing,
sure,
who doesn't want to talk about topics, and then on it puts a lot more on your plate.
Yeah.
So how have you adjusted to that, working with so many different people and trying to keep what's been a successful show in a time slot that was challenging,
yeah,
staying where it's been?
I've shifted. Well, one thing with Dunk, you know, when we first started, Haas gave me great advice. He said, just be likable. Just be likable for the first year. And that always stuck with me. And I actually didn't realize how important that was until I'm in St. Louis. This is my eighth year in living in St. Louis. Here in St. Louis, in this market, they care about you being likable. Because
mm-hmm.
if you're this outsider that thinks you know everything and you're going to put yourself in front of the city, boy, you're going to die a very fast death. You know that.
Yep.
You know that being an outsider yourself.
Yep.
So Haas just said, just be likable. Don't worry about giving out your personality. Don't even tell people who you are. Be prepared, know your shit, and be likable. And that's what I did for the first year. And then gradually, as people got to know me, I kind of opened up. Well, the other thing that, you know, I got the advice was, set up Dunk. Be the point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Randy is a tremendous point guard, but he still finds a way to get in his opinions and show his personality. Cool, that's what I'm going to do with Chris Duncan, who is the star of, you know, the name of the show. I'm on his coattails early on. I'm cool with that. I'm going to be prepared, but I'm happy to be here too. It's not that different working with a new co-host every day. What can I get out of them? That's no different from having a great guest on, right? You're probably doing it with me right now. What can I get out of him right now? That's what I do with my guest. What are they good at? What are they strong about? What buttons can I push to make sure that there's at least a little bit of drama here? And what are the things that I can't talk to him about? Because I'm going to get a deer in the headlight look, and it's not going to be any good for the producer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is some unselfishness that has to go for there. Sometimes I feel more like a caddy as opposed to being, you know, the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And after 5-6 years, at some point, everybody wants a big audience. Everybody wants to be the guy. But that honestly has been the biggest strength, I guess, in trying to keep the show alive. I've got Jen Langosh. I'm not going to talk to her about the Blues. I'm going to talk to her about the Cardinals. Same thing with Mark Saxon. If I have Nick Wagner in from ESPN.com, who's a really good friend of mine, I know that dude can talk about anything because he can find the big story. So I'll talk to him the night before. We're not breaking down Cardinals games like I did with Chris Duncan. What's the big storyline from the series? So it's just about knowing those guys, just like you know a guest, being unselfish, but at the same time try to maintain that when listeners listen in, they know me and they know what to expect from me. So it's kind of finding a balance.
It's interesting you were talking about, you know, getting the acceptance of the St. Louis sports fan and how they are reserved. They take 2 years. I remember when I moved here, people told me 2 years, the first 2 years, you're going to hate it. After that, you'll start to get used to it. And by year 4 or 5, you'll start to love it. And they were dead on about all of that. And so what's interesting about that is you mentioned earlier on, you grew up on the outskirts of Chicago. You worked in Detroit. I know you're a Falcons fan.
Yeah,
I know
you're Deion Sanders,
San Francisco Giants fan, right?
Will Clark. So, when I was a kid, I just followed. I like certain guys, and I'm
so
a fan.
So I'm like, you're like a mutt when it comes to sports. You come from every other city, every other fandom. And by the way, we live and die Cardinals. So you, and you're attached to a Cardinal, so you better show respect to our Cardinal,
sure.
Right? So you've got to get that acceptance. But the other thing that you also bring to the table is, although on the air you don't play this, you're a degenerate in some terms because you are a gambling fanatic.
I am.
So what's your record at right now? Or as we're taping this today?
27-10.
Okay, 27-10 is pretty good.
Yeah.
In baseball?
Yep. Last couple
weeks.
How'd you
do in football last year?
Last year I hit about 58%.
All right, well, that's good. People make more money than lose with you,
certainly,
so it's not bad. I want to talk to you about your approach to executing that kind of content on the air, because obviously right now there's a lot of interest in it. People, you know, states are starting to legalize it. It's growing in importance. How do you approach it on the air to where you keep the hardcore fan who's not into gambling content listening to a segment that's talking about things related to gambling?
Sure. I've noticed recently that people love trends. So if I throw out like, hey, the Cardinals are 11-1 with Miles Michaelis on the mound. Boom. Okay, so now I got a Cardinal fan interested. They're interested in just the number.
Right.
It's simple. They know 11 wins, one loss. I can kind of play it that way. And then I can slip in, hey, by the way, the Mets are an underdog tonight. I kind of like them. So it's still localizing it as much as possible, but giving that one eye-popping figure that they can tell their buddies at the water cooler with. Hey, I was listening to Stalter, and he said, did you know the Cardinals were 11-1 with Miles Michaelis on the mound? To me, in life, in radio, in any, what value do you provide somebody? That's all it is. If I can give some sort of betting nugget to somebody to make them look smarter in front of their friends, or to make them money if they're betting legally, you know, if they're in Vegas or something, that provides value to them. How different is that from just providing regular Cardinals content,
right?
You know, if I'm on the mic and, you know, all right, we got to talk Cardinals 95% of the day. Well, great. Bernie is the best. He's a genius. He talked to our St. Louis audience for 3 hours. Kevin's a baseball savant, Kevin Wheeler. He's talked to you for 3 hours. The hell am I going to provide 1 to 3 that hasn't already been said? Well, if I can provide some sort of different value to our listener to, again, make yourself feel smarter, make them feel smarter, give you something that's going to stick with you, that's no different than betting as well.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think sports betting is coming. You and I talked about this before the podcast. I told Dan Belloc, our producer, I said, look, the whole, like, Anthony is a degenerate, he bets on everything, that's a nice bit on air. Sports betting is coming. And if we don't get ahead of this, we're stupid. Because you got somebody that's been doing it, me, since I was like 10 years old. So why don't we try to incorporate some of this slowly into the show? We've had some bumps. When I talk about baseball betting, people don't get it. They don't understand the money line. It's not a true point spread, so not a lot of people do it. So I've had to kind of learn on the fly what is digestible information and what's not. But again, I think the theme is here, can I provide value for you? If I can, I'm going to win you over, and you're going to listen to the next day, too.
I want to talk to you about the brand, because it's getting ready to be 10 years, which is unbelievable. I can't believe it was 10 years ago this radio station was launched. During that time, highly rated, Marconi Award nominee. No play-by-play, though, on the radio station, which is why it's even more amazing, because no Cardinals, no Blues, the football team left town. With all apologies to SLU, they don't provide the spike that those other teams do.
Sure.
Why do you believe, you've been here for most of that run, why do you believe listeners are so connected to this brand?
I think because they know that they're going to get true opinion. I used to hear it a lot with the Rams coverage. You guys are blowing smoke up our ass. Why do you keep trying to, you know, put lipstick on a pig and all this stuff? It's a relationship. You're not going to court your wife or husband by being an asshole to them. You know, you're going to try to foster that relationship, right? So we tried to do that with the Rams. The PR staff was excellent for the Rams. I got they were great. They worked with us. I can't ask for James Laurinaitis to do a one-on-one interview if I say, hey, this guy's a schmuck and he should, you know, the contract is overblown. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I try to be as honest as possible. Hey, you should have made that tackle. Hey, I think he was out of position here. You try to be as honest as possible. But ultimately, to some degree, you are handcuffed by that relationship if you're a play-by-play. We don't have, you know, we have a relationship with the Blues, we have a relationship with the Cardinals, but ultimately, if the fan base is killing Mike Matheny and you listen to us and you're looking for a little mood service that day, we're going to give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you listen to Bernie in the mornings, he's going to tell you Mike Matheny completely screwed up from the seventh inning on. We're not going to worry about fostering that relationship. That doesn't mean we don't want the Blues on play-by-play or the Cardinals on play-by-play, because those are such a big brand as well. We want to partner with the best, right? But I think that's why people come to the one-on-one ESPN brand. It's going to be personalities, it's going to be opinion, and you know what? If the team stunk that day, we're going to say it.
Now, as you go forward, you look at the next 10 years, what does this brand have to do to remain relevant and to excel beyond where it even is now?
That's a great question, and one I'm probably not prepared to answer, but essentially do the same thing that we're doing right now. And having big-time names, Bernie Mikulas, again, he's a genius. I mean, that guy is unbelievable. There's so many things. I listen to him daily, right? Randy Carricker is Mr. St. Louis. He's adored by the St. Louis listenership and fan base here. You heard when the Rams were leaving, him give up that passionate speech that he had. And I remember doing the Rams pregame show the week after that happened. There was a line at our booth of people wanting to shake Randy's hand after that, right? You can't get that anywhere else. He is St. Louis from a sports standpoint. Brad Thompson, he comes in as a fill-in for Dunk when Dunk had his health scare. You've got a guy that can bring you inside the clubhouse, but also has an opinion, that also likes football, that also
very
likes basketball.
Very self-deprecating, too.
Self-deprecating, which is awesome. Chris Duncan, you listen to Danny Mac and Randy and Bernie say, there's no way in hell Chris Duncan becomes a radio guy when it's all said and done. He doesn't say anything, right?
Right.
And all of a sudden, you got T-shirts printed, Dunkisms, with right. all the Dunk slang on them in the back, right?
You know, it's funny, because I was the one who hired Dunk as a part-time analyst. And I told John, the GM in this building, I said, hey, I'm taking a dinner with Chris Duncan. I said, Chris Duncan? The former outfielder? I said, yeah. He said, doesn't that guy hate the media? I said, yeah, he does, but we're going to see.
There.
Right? We'll just see what it's like. So I go down. Actually, the restaurant downstairs from where the radio station's located, we catch up, and we hit it off. And I went, I know there's something here.
Yeah.
And so I go to John, and I go, listen, we're getting that guy in this building. This guy has got something. And he's like, really? Chris Duncan? I said, you just got to trust me on this. Right? So we get him in that he's going to do part-time. And I tell Randy and I tell Bob Ramsey, who's working with him at the time. And Rammer goes, I got to tell you, that might be a really bad idea. I mean, this guy hates everything about the media. I said, Bob, this guy's going to shock you.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like February. It was right around spring training. We bring Dunk in for his first hit. It's probably about 2 years into the radio station. And I'm just telling Dunk, like, listen, come with one nugget that nobody has and have fun. I knew his self-deprecation because I learned that at dinner. Like, I didn't know that, because if you watched him, he wasn't very comfortable in front of a television camera after a game if he had a bad play. So I learned pretty quick. He's got a good sense of humor. Well, we bring him in, and I remember Pujols had got off to like this really terrible start in spring training. And Rammer asks him, so look, you know, Pujols, I know it's only 2 weeks into spring training, but why shouldn't Cardinal fans be concerned right now? And he goes, Bob, let me tell you something. Bob Welch had a 27 ERA in the year that he won 27 or 24 games, whatever it was, with the Oakland A's. That, my friend, is why you don't worry about. And Rammer comes to me and I got to tell you, I didn't see that coming. Like, the guy was prepared. And then, like, later on, obviously, Chris has done the work. And that's what ultimately, I didn't know he was going to become a 5-day-a-week host, because, you know, I was only with him for a few months. But when you put the work in, if you have personality, that's what ultimately leads you to a good spot. And that's why, as we're talking about the next 10 years, like, you got to have more people.
You have to have talent. There's a kid right now working. He's the producer for Kevin Wheeler. His name is Brandon Kiley. He's a 25-year-old kid. I'm telling you right now, he's going to host a show at some point. I hope it's here. You know, when it's appropriate. But If it's not, he's going to be hosting someplace else. And you talk about where talent meets preparation. This kid is unbelievable. I work with him. We do a football show on Sundays. The topic development for this guy, he gets it. He gets transitions. He gets out. He's a talent. Hoss found him. You have to be able to find talent, cultivate it, and hope that they become personalities when it's all said and done and continue to do the work. So 10 years, you know, that is what's going to have to happen.
All right, so I'm going to wrap up with something I do call quick hits. Four questions, first thing that comes to mind on each of these, all right?
I'll probably get myself into trouble here.
Of course. The thing that you do best and the thing you need to work on most are what?
Oh, wow. I think that I transition very, very well. When I do my writing, you know, you got a lead, you've got your examples, and then you got a hook, right? You got a conclude or a hook, and then a conclusion. I think I do that extremely well. Some guys are scattershot; it works for them. Not me. I know that if I can hook you, provide examples, and close, you're going to stick with me through the break. Mm-hmm. Teases, I think I do incredibly well as well. There are times when they talk about things I don't do well. There are certain sports that if it doesn't draw my interest, I won't dive in as much, and I might, you know, kind of tiptoe around him, and I don't have an opinion. NBA, sometimes I do that with some of these other sports, soccer, you know, but not that, you know, that's huge.
Right.
And even hockey, I think I can absolutely improve in some of those.
That's why they call it show business, right? Sometimes
absolutely.
You got to act.
Right.
The host or hosts currently in sports radio doing it right and who should be studied to improve as a talent are who?
Okay, so Bernie for sure locally. Bernie is a guy that he is so unique and so creative. His work ethic is second to none. He is unbelievable, and he is somebody that's going to – when he says he gets up at 3 a.m., he gets up at 3 a.m. He's writing columns every single day, but he's finding unique stuff. I mean, there are times where, you're saying yourself, all right, I got to talk about this, and I'm probably going to say something that the first guy said. Not Bernie. Bernie is the leader from that regard. Colin Cowherd, I think, is – an entertainer, and the best thing that Colin Cowherd does is he relates to his audience. And that is one thing I don't think a lot of hosts, there's some hosts that struggle with that. If you're not relating to the audience, your audience isn't going to pay attention to you. Whereas there's some hosts that say, how do I not look stupid today? Well, you're being safe. You're not saying anything. I think Cowherd, whether you agree or disagree, and he's not always right, and there's sometimes I grimace, I'm like, you don't even know that guy's name. But he's so good at relating to the audience that people want to listen to him. I think he's the best. And I think Lebatard does a good job too. He's not somebody I seek out every single time because he's out of the box for me.
One piece of advice to producers who are trying to transition from behind the scenes to in front of the mic would be what?
If you get your shot on air, realize that is your shot. So if the host brings you on for 20 seconds, you better fucking bring the thunder. These guys, they don't realize that. I hear it so many times. I didn't get my shot to host that show. Well, what happened to the 42 other times when, you know, you did an update or the host went to you in the corner for something zingy and you just didn't have anything? That is your opportunity. So when you have something and that mic cracks, if you don't deliver, that is your resume. That is your chance. Because you know, as a program director, if you're sitting there and you're doing something else and you stop to listen to what the guy's got to say, you immediately, okay, that guy has something. And a lot of producers don't do that.
Final one. When I last was here, I taped a podcast with Bernie Miklas, who told me he thought you were the best host on this radio station.
Wow.
It's your turn now. And I know you're going to pick Bernie, so I'm going to not let you pick Bernie.
Okay.
The second best sports radio host in St. Louis would be who?
Okay, so Randy's obviously up there. I'm going to go with Brad Thompson. You talk about, like, Chris Duncan, natural talent, somebody that didn't go to school for this, that comes in, you don't know what you're going to get. I'll tell you a quick story on Brad Thompson. So when he was filling in for Dunk, we're doing what we're doing with me now in our show. We had different co-hosts come in. We had a hockey player one day, hockey announcer the next day. Literally every day, somebody was filling in for Dunk. Dunk recommends having BTN. Brad comes in after his first show. It may have been after, I'm not trying to exaggerate, but it might have been after his first segment or two. I walk into Haas's office, I walk into Ken Sterling's office, I go, if you bring in anybody else and not allow Brad Thompson to do this show, forget about me booking anybody else.
they already thought that anyways. Right. I didn't have to say that, right? They're probably like,
you're just re-emphasizing the point. Hey, yeah, we need to get this guy.
He was so good. You hear him now. He's funny. He's self-deprecating. He's quick-witted. But the biggest thing is he does his homework.
Yep.
And Dunk did that too, where he was clearly prepared. And there's so many former athletes that, oh, okay, no problem. I'll bring you inside the clubhouse or I'll bring you inside the locker room. And then they don't because they don't want to offend anybody. And then what's their true value? And then they're not doing the work pre-show either. Brad does their work. He's a natural talent. And he's a rising star. You see him on Fox Sports Midwest.
The other thing that's amazing, like you don't usually see a lot of former athletes who can transition when the lead guy is out into the lead chair.
Yeah, that's a great
point. I mean, this guy moves. He's a former player who's been in the game for less than 5 years, and yet he steps in and he's hosting the show when Randy takes off. And obviously, Randy's in a special class as far as drivers go. But he does a good job driving a show. And I'm like, man, that's pretty amazing that he's picked that up so fast.
It is. It's incredible. The way he can transition in and out, the way he sets up his host. Because he's a third chair. He's used to being set up. And he can deliver his couple of lines, make an immediate impact, and then shut up. And, oh, look, Brad, you look good. You're driving. You're exposed a lot more. You're saying a lot more. You could say something stupid. But Brad does a great job.
It's good to see you, man.
You too.
Congrats on the show.
Thank you.
A lot of success, and hopefully we'll get Dunk back soon.
Yeah, definitely. I'm hoping for it. He's such a good guy. Thank you for having me on the pod.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.